This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the playoffs edition of Sharing Sox. I'm Southside Sox duty geezer Lee Allen. With me, my son and West Coast correspondent Will. And we won't be talking about the White Sox in the playoffs for rather obvious reasons. Will is wearing a Phillies hat. Resembles the hat that he used to wear as a teenager during our summer leagues that I coached.
Well, and my first team ever was the Phillies. My first pitch team was the Phillies. So that is why I got this hat, in honor of my first coach pitch team a couple years ago. I got this to honor them, and then the Phillies got really good. So I'm not saying it's me. But I don't think you can rule me out as a key reason the Phillies are having the success that they're having.
Certainly a possibility that we have to keep in mind. Meanwhile, possibilities in the playoffs have not come up the way the probabilities would have expected. You folks out in Los Angeles, amongst the many disappointments on the scene, were the Dodgers getting straight ripped out. But there was a lot more than that. You know, not a single series has gone to a win or go home. I mean, not both teams win or go home. Not to a final game. No third game of the best of three. No fifth game of the best of five.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, there's been excitement in this postseason, but there hasn't really been excitement in this postseason. The excitement has only come from seeing the Blue Bloods lose. But we have not, as you said, we've had no final game of the series. It's actually looking like we're not going to have a final game of the series.
That's until what it looks like. We should say we're recording on Wednesday afternoon with Texas up two games on Houston and the Phillies up two games on Arizona, which I think is sad because I like Arizona because they're fast. You know how I really like speed, but they're gonna be muscled out of this.
You can't discredit what Arizona's done. They are an amazing young team. They overachieved by leaps and bounds this year. Torey Lovello, I think, is one of the best managers in all of baseball. And the way he talks to his players, the way he manages the game, his activity during the game. There is no sitting back and wondering what Torey Lovello is going to do. He is on his feet, and whenever there's a question, he's out of the dugout immediately getting clarification. He's talking to his players nonstop throughout games. This dude is coaching baseball in a way that you see with very good little league teams and very good high school teams. He is active. He is active throughout the whole game. And what we haven't seen from some of the other managers is that same kind of fire and tenacity from the teams that have been eliminated, including three of your teams that had a first-round bye, which I think is something we should talk about, too. It's kind of a hot topic right now, is whether or not the first-round bye is helpful. It certainly didn't look helpful for Los Angeles. It didn't look helpful for Atlanta.
Or for Baltimore.
Or for Baltimore, who Atlanta didn't get swept out of their round, but they, you know, were losing 4-0 late in a game that could have led them to be swept out of the first round. And they pulled off that double play on Bryce Harper. But what do you think about this? Because, you know, it's easy to say it is a problem and it's easy to say it's not a problem. You know, no matter what, if you have 5 days off, why do Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman go 1-for-21? Why do you guys?
Yeah, that was amazing.
The Dodgers,
you know, you expected the Dodgers to have bad pitching because their whole staff is hurt, basically.
Yeah.
But the hitting, whoa.
And you know, it wasn't just those two. You have four guys on the Dodgers who have 100 or more RBIs in a season. First time that's ever happened with the Dodgers. And between the four of them, they had one RBI on a solo home run in three games against an 84-win team. And that's not to discredit the Diamondbacks in any way. We knew that the Diamondbacks were actually in good shape for a short series because they have two aces, essentially, in Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly. But they certainly don't have a third in Brandon Pfaadt. And Brandon Pfaadt actually looked the best of the three of them against the Dodgers. But what do you think? Do you think this break is a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it could be a negative. On the one hand, I mean, you say, on the one hand, you get to rest up. Everybody's injured at this time of year. Everybody's got little aches and pains. You have a chance to get those to go away. You have a chance to think more about the pitchers that you're apt to face in the next round. And there are those advantages, but they've even talked about in the past just the 3 or 4 day break being a weakness for the teams that got the bye. And now you got damn near a week. Well, you're off for a week, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sunday to one of the leagues.
Sunday to Saturday, we were off. Yeah. The Dodgers were off. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see where that's a negative. I don't think it's going to change. Manfred doesn't look like he's got any inclination to do it. So
It's really interesting because, you know, your regular season teams that win over 100 games, those are the teams that mastered the rhythm of the regular season. It's really, really, really hard to win 100 games in 162. I mean, that is the schedule that Major League Baseball players face is, I think, far more difficult than the other sports. I realize on an everyday basis, baseball's not as physically demanding as basketball. If you're not pitching, it's not as demanding as football in terms of the potential for injury. But playing 162 games in roughly 180 days, 185 days, I mean, that's a lot when you add in vast amounts of travel, sometimes cross-country travel overnight.
Oh, yeah, I think the travel is really the big deal. I think that's the big deal.
It is a lot of travel. Sometimes you're only home for 3 days before you hit the road again. They try to make it, you know, 6 or 7, but that doesn't always happen. So you look at teams like Baltimore, Atlanta, and Los Angeles, who I'm going to use as our examples because they were the expected winners of their series and did not fare well. Those are teams that had the rhythm down pat. They figured out how to go out there and play at a consistent level for 162 games. Does a week off in the middle help going into the playoffs? Like, obviously they get the All-Star break in the season, but that's just a couple days. And you do see quite a shift at times of teams.
Everybody gets it.
Yeah. So that you do see a lot of shifts after the All-Star break and how teams are doing. You know, you famously hear a lot that so-and-so was bad before the break and so-and-so has been incredible since. Dodgers being a prime example, they were sitting in third place for most of the first half of the season. Second half of the season, run away with it. Absolutely run away with
the
it.
Philly, it's the Phillies 2 years in a row.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. So does this break really halt that momentum completely? And I think there's an argument that it does. These guys get used to working out on specific schedules. They get used to their methods of preparation. You know, you have guys like Freddie Freeman who prepares religiously one way during a season, guys like Clayton Kershaw who prepare religiously one way during the season, and then they hit this 6-day break at the time when they need the most momentum, and momentum is kind of ground to a halt. And, you know, I watched some of the inter-squad games with the Dodgers during those days off, and, you know, the team looked good, but there is no fire required for an inter-squad Thursday afternoon session. There is, you know, obviously you're going out there to get your swings in and get your ground balls and your fly balls in, get your pitchers a little bit of work. But, you know, the only people that we saw really doing not necessarily even well, although in the Dodgers' case very well, but had the fire of postseason play were the bullpens. I mean, there was such a huge disconnect between the energy coming from the bullpens of these teams and what was happening in the dugout for those three teams. The dugouts looked dead. The Dodgers looked dead behind the eyes from game one. I mean, obviously, Kershaw comes out, gives
up. I think in that emotional state, the one that surprised me the most for being flat was Baltimore, because Baltimore was so much an enthusiasm team, with Rutschman leading the way and the fire and coming out from behind the plate, building everybody up.
Baltimore just sort of fell asleep, which again, Baltimore was an overachieving team this year. This was not a team that was expected to win the AL East. This was a projected third place team in the AL East, a potential playoff team, but definitely not expected to run away with the AL East. Dodgers were actually also not projected necessarily to win the NL West. They certainly weren't projected to win it by 14 games. The biggest surprise for me was actually Atlanta.
Who many people were calling the best team in the history of the universe.
Well, and if not the best team, the best offense. And, you know, the stats actually back that up. That was not an eye test. These guys, the Atlanta lineup from 1 to 9 was terrifying. And, you know, if the Dodgers did get past the Diamondbacks and the Braves did get past the Phillies, I don't think there's anybody in the world who expected the Dodgers to be able to beat Atlanta when the Dodgers had no pitchers left. I mean, nothing. They had Kershaw, whose arm might not even be on his body anymore. It seems to be falling off completely. And then you have to throw rookies. And I'm a big
advocate. Lance Lynn.
And Lance Lynn, who I'm actually going to say, and we'll talk about Lance Lynn right now because he came over from the White Sox. I think Lance Lynn was done dirty by management of his own team. I mean, you've got a guy who doesn't really throw that many curveballs, throwing 4 curveballs that are all hit out of the park. And, you know, I guess you can blame Lance for saying, hell no, I'm not throwing another curveball. But someone's still calling that pitch over and over and over, and all 4 are hit out of the park. This is a fastball pitcher. I mean, there's at no point have we ever been on this podcast and said, boy, Lance Lynn lives and dies by that curveball, doesn't he?
We did talk. He had that one game where in he Seattle, kind of broke out the curve that nobody had ever seen before from him, and it was superb. And then it just kind of disappeared.
Yeah. I mean, the 17 strikeout game or whatever it was, we did see the curveball. But that was because he had never thrown a curveball. So everybody was – all the Seattle hitters were looking fastball and getting these pitches that they just didn't know this guy was going to throw. But fast forward, you kind of know that he might throw a curveball at this point. Those were some of the worst curveballs I've ever seen in Major League Baseball. I mean, I think if you put me out there throwing my curveball, they're only hitting 3 out of 4 out. Like these things were, you know, the exact speed you want them to be as a pitcher. They were all starting around the shoulders and ending straight over the middle of the plate. I mean, these were the worst curveballs I have seen, especially in a playoff scenario. But why are they being called over and over and over? You know, I used to be a pitcher. I had bad days, of course. The one thing you don't do on your bad day is just keep saying, yeah, I'm going to throw the pitch that's definitely not working. I'm going to go out there. It's going to work one of these days. It's going to work one of these days. And if it were a cutter we're talking about, then I'd say, yes, you got to let Lance Lynn keep throwing the cutter, because if you can't figure out the cutter today, the game's over. But, you know, when you look back at it, that's four solo home runs in the third inning. You're down 4-0. They didn't score again. So you can't really put it all on Lance Lynn. Guys got to get hits. Guys didn't get hits.
I mean, they scored 2 runs a game for 3 games. That's not going to get you much anywhere.
And they averaged 5.65 during the regular season. So you go from averaging almost 6 runs a game to putting up 2. And what it comes down to is the top of the order. You know, the bottom of the order actually got it done for LA. They were the ones scoring the 2. But the top of the order, those 100 RBI guys had 1 RBI between them. I think they were 3 or 4 for 30-something between them. And then you look at the Atlanta side, who didn't show up, the top of the order. They weren't getting home runs from Olsen, your home run leader. They weren't really even getting hits from Ronald Acuna Jr. What we saw was the stars did not get it done for these teams in any way, shape, or form. And can you blame the break? Yes. But can you also not blame the break? Yes. I mean, these are Major League Baseball players. They were facing pitchers that they've seen you can
blame,
before.
I think you can especially blame the break for Game 1. I don't think you have any blame on the break for Games 2, 3, and subsequent.
Yeah.
Before we get off the topic of the playoffs, though, I want to switch to the American League, because we and everybody else in Chicago or the Midwest or actually the baseball world talked about the horror of the AL Central, which is a horror. Maybe the worst division ever to play baseball or Major League Baseball. In the playoffs, the East, the mighty AL East, the greatest division ever to stomp upon the earth, was 0-7.
Yeah.
And the pitiful little AL Central, represented by a team that hadn't won a playoff game in 20 years, was 3-3.
Yeah, I mean, this was the year of all years to tell you that preseason projections mean nothing. I mean, the AL East, which, you know, there were times where people were saying, are 4 teams from the AL East going to go to the playoffs? And they got
reasonable question.
They got, yeah, and it was close till the, you know, for a while, until the Yankees decided they were done and the Red Sox decided they were done. But I definitely think this was very eye-opening for what the regular season can mean in terms of the postseason. But as we've always known, they are very different styles of baseball. Postseason and regular season are very different. You don't need 5 good starters for the postseason ever. You need 3. And these teams had starters.
For the first round, you need 2.
And for the first round, you need 2. And
they don't have to. You want innings out of your starters. I mean, it's fewer and fewer innings as time goes on. It used to be always went 9 and then 8 and then 7. And now it's, you hope, 6. But the playoffs, it may be 3. And you're really happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
The slow hook on Lance Lynn. But basically, that's just because the Dodgers didn't have any pitchers left. The hooks are really quick.
They are. They're very, very quick. And you know, the bullpens came to play for these teams. I think if you told Dave Roberts that in Games 2 and 3, you're going to get 14 innings of one-run baseball, I think any manager would say, great, we're going to the next round. I mean, it's incredible. But starting pitching has been sort of it's been half of the story. And then the other half has just been a total lack of production from these offensives that were explosive all year, especially looking at you, Atlanta, but also the Dodgers and also the Orioles. I mean, those offenses completely fell asleep. And here now we're here, and you've got a Houston team who was also on that, you know, had that week off, who was down 2-0 to a team from their own division that they won the division of. And, you know, I'll be surprised if Houston can come back in that series. They dropped 2 at home, and now they're going to go to Texas. Texas's starters got them innings. So Texas isn't sitting there worrying like, oh, everybody's gassed and we've got nothing left. Houston starters got them some innings, but not nearly enough. If you look at the NLCS, that is over. The NLCS is over. You're playing Philadelphia. I realize they got to go to Arizona now, but the way the Arizona fan base works, it's going to be 70% Phillies fans in those stands. It's going to be a home game light for Philadelphia, as it was for the Dodgers, and it didn't pay off. But the Phillies are red hot. I mean, they are on fire. I would be shocked. I mean, I think if Arizona comes back,
yeah, we've talked now, about the superstars who haven't produced offensively. Bryce Harper, opposite.
Trey Turner, opposite. Kyle Schwarber, who every year I can't believe he's a Major League Baseball player because he hits around 100, and then he gets you 40 home runs a year, so that's why he's a Major League Baseball player, but. You get to the postseason, and it's like you can't throw the ball to him. You know, if you throw the
Castellanos,
who is a famous butt of the joke in Major League Baseball. If you follow Major League Baseball social media, everyone spends the whole year making fun of Castellanos. That's all you do. And all the fans do is say, God, you can't win if you got Castellanos. And then he comes out in the postseason, and he plays MVP caliber baseball in the postseason. That is what you need to have happen in the postseason with your guys who are more of your liabilities during the regular season. They have to step up. And everybody for Philadelphia is stepping up on the offensive side, on the defensive side. But we should take our break here so we can come back and talk about what's the name of the team?
It's the White Sox.
Yeah, that's it. That's the team where the gun went off in the stadium and nobody cared. That's them, right?
No, yeah, nobody cares anymore.
Okay, perfect. So we will be right back so we can talk about the Chicago White Sox. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on Sharing Socks. Welcome back to Sharing Socks. We dissected the playoffs, which have been exciting and not exciting at the same time. And so we will sit on the non-exciting side of things and talk about the Chicago White Sox and what the off-season picture looks like. You wrote a piece talking about some of our key player options that will be coming up. And I think that's where we should lead off here is talk about who you're going to keep and who you're not going to keep.
The response was that was good because Brett put a survey at the end of it. So my just for folks out there who just didn't happen to read it, my feeling you have the three options, all of which are strange, none of which are normal options. One with, call him Mr. X, which is a mutual option where it doesn't really matter what the White Sox do because he's going to turn it down because he actually did pitch well, especially toward the end of the season. So they could actually decline his and look like they have morals and ethics, and it doesn't matter because they weren't going to get him anyway. Then there's Liam Hendricks, the opposite situation, most wonderful guy you could possibly have, but who really whose option is weird. It's either $15 million now or $15 million over 10 years. And yes, you'd rather have it now, but it's still, he's not getting, they're not putting the screws to him by not picking up the option. And to me, if they don't pick up the option, he had Tommy John at the beginning of April. Traditionally, it's been about 14 months for recovery lately because of new techniques and whatnot, a year. Maybe suffice a gosh, if anybody can do that, Hendricks can. We know that. So he would be sometime in early August, perhaps. Good luck coming back to the majors. That's too late for the White Sox to then trade him for anything. And for him to go to a team that has a chance to be in the playoffs. The White Sox, I think at the end of August, I think there may be 250 games out of first. That could be an exaggeration. It may only be 220 or so, but I mean, they're done. And I think you're doing him a favor. I think you sit down with him and you talk it over. He said he wants to come back, but I think he's just being nice because he's nice.
Yeah.
And you say, look, we're not going to take it. And then you go out and be a free agent as soon as somebody looks like, because if somebody picks him up before the 1st of September, he can be in the playoffs.
Right.
And he'll make extra money beyond what the White Sox are paying him for the buyout. So he's going to be financially better off. He's going to be for sure baseball better off. And last year he was, remember at the end of 2022, he's going, I got to strike everybody out because nobody will catch the ball. Well, that improved slightly, but it very, very, very,
very slightly.
Very, very slightly. I mean, it's just about as bad now. The only big difference is that Luis Robert, who was kind of disinterested in 2022, decided he liked baseball again, and he's a superstar. But every place else defensively, my God.
Yeah, I mean, you're replacing raw onions with grilled onions there. Are they better? Yeah, but they're still onions. And I'm an onion fan, so this analogy is for non-onion fans. But yeah, I mean, I think if you have a decent bone in your body as the White Sox, you let him go, which is a weird thing to say about a cancer survivor who has had Tommy John surgery. To say, oh, we're going to do you a favor and get you out of here. But in this case, it actually would be quite a favor. He serves no purpose.
It makes
on
no
the White
difference
Sox.
In his medical coverage or anything like that. That's all MLB wide. And so he's fine. He's fine on everything. And I think he would love to go to a winning team. Everybody would. And then then the third one is Tim Anderson, a more straightforward actual. Choice because it's $1 million buyout or $14 million salary. But I really think, again, you're doing Tim a favor by not taking it. My recommendation is because the trading deadline is over the day after the World Series. Trading opens up. Nothing ever happens, but trading technically opens up the day after the World Series. Option day is 5 days after the World Series. So if Chris Getz is anything but the blithering idiot we think he is, he's got 4 days to try to find if anybody would take Tim Anderson if you picked up the option. And they might. I mean, it's what, -2, -3 war this year. But historically, I mean, over his career, he averaged just over 2.3 war. So 14's high for somebody you've got, but about what goes on the free agent market, especially because middle infielders are non-existent in free agency this offseason.
Correct.
I mean,
correct.
Last offseason, all the great shortstops of the game went, and then this offseason, nothing.
Yeah.
So he could be a find, and especially he has said he's willing to play second base, which I think he said for the ears of the rest of the major leagues, not for the White
Sox.
Correct. And on that basis, I think some of the bigger spending teams would take that chance at just 1 year, and it'd be a 1 year prove it for him to try and get the big contract back at the end of that. He's not that old. He's only 30.
Yeah.
And I think you're doing him a favor if you can't trade him by just not taking
him. I think that with Tim Anderson, and we talk about this a lot, and a lot of people do, change of scenery is likely going to be the thing that helps him get back to what he was.
And all the bad stuff off the field is here in Chicago.
Yeah.
All the huge expectations that he can't live up to now are in Chicago.
But
the face
of
the franchise stuff is in Chicago. He's not going to be that some other place, especially with a good team. So he won't have those pressures going for him. I think he'll be a much better ball player. I think he could be, you know, the 2021 all over again.
And I want him to be, too. I mean, I like Tim Anderson. I've said very nice things and very not nice things about his play on this podcast, but I want Tim Anderson to succeed. I think if you are a big spending team, you absolutely should make this move. You should get Tim Anderson.
If you need a middle infielder.
And a lot of them do.
And a lot of them do.
A lot of them do, either a shortstop or a second baseman, and kind of more so a second baseman. And I definitely think that if you are going to be in the market for a new second baseman, because this free agency is so void of middle infielders, you get Tim Anderson as soon as you can. Get him out of Chicago as soon as you can and get him working with your coaches. Because a huge reason I think Tim Anderson's so bad this year is the coaching in Chicago is just terrible across the board. And we're going to be seeing a lot of new guys, but it's terrible. And you need to get Tim Anderson to one of these teams that has coaches that coach the game of baseball, that teach fundamentals, that can get him into elite second baseman form by the time we get to March.
I think not only teaching him, but I think that there's so little research done in Chicago. There was somebody a couple of weeks ago I saw that listed numbers of people, you don't know at what levels, but numbers of people in the research departments of each major league team. And at the top was Tampa Bay. So here you got low money team putting the money into learning how to do it. And they do it brilliantly for the money they've got. And the bottom was open. Well, big surprise. But I think third up from the bottom, tied with Kansas City with the White Sox, 11. But Tampa Bay had like 35 people in the research department. Sox had 11. And that's
got to change. But the other thing with the research,
Tim obviously does not read pitches. I mean, he's always near the, even in his good years, it was near the worst in the league at swinging outside the zone. Now, part of that is he's good at taking outside pitches to right field. So he doesn't care whether it's outside the zone or not. He's trying to take advantage of that. But that's not all of it. All of the rest is he just doesn't pick up pitches right. And these great research departments, all the video that they do and all the kinesiology that they do, could help him immensely. I mean, he could be a big star again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which is exactly why I'm saying if you need a second baseman right now, which a lot of the big spenders do, you get him as soon as possible to get him working on these things in the offseason. If you hold out and you end up with him later, I do not think he will be nearly as effective. But I think if you can get Tim Anderson right away, and I'm looking at a team like the Dodgers, if you can get Tim Anderson right away, get him in with an elite coaching staff and get the guy doing research and really learning the fundamentals of modern Major League Baseball again, I think he could be an absolute asset for a team. Do I think he's going to hit 330? Probably not. But this is a guy who could hit 300 for you out of the second base slot, which these days is almost unheard of if your name's not Jose Altuve.
And he could also get added on base percentage with some training on pitch recognition and zone recognition.
And I think Tim Anderson, with the correct fielding coaches, could be one of the best second basemen in Major League Baseball.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he has a shot at being a top 15 shortstop. But I do think with the right coaching staff, working with him from day three out of the season, or trade.
We'll get a trade to be day two.
Yeah. If you can get him starting then, I think he could be one of the best second basemen in Major League Baseball, which is an underrated thing to be. It makes a huge difference when you have an elite second baseman. It's not as important as a shortstop. I'm not going to act like it is. Probably not as important as a third baseman. Not going to act like it is. But if you have an elite second baseman, it changes everything for your shortstop and for your first baseman. It changes everything.
The old saw, and while things change in baseball, this one does not. The critical point is your defense up the middle. Catcher, second, short, and center.
Yep.
Absolutely critical. And he's an upgrade at second base for most teams. Now, after I wrote that, there was a lot of response because Brett created a poll. And the poll was, do you agree with Lee that these three all should be dropped or none of them should be dropped? And then is it A and not B and C, B and not, you know, every alternative.
I've got the updated stats pulled up right now. I waited to put in my vote so I could have our stats for us right here.
Okay. I did not get a majority. Shame on people. But it was a plurality, solid plurality. 33%, I think, was steadily going along. I don't know.
You're down to 32, but still next closest is 15. So that is a very solid. You're doing far better than Jim Jordan is this morning. Yeah.
Yes. And then the 15 was to keep Liam and not take the options on Mr. X and on Tim.
Correct. That's still true.
And I think that's more an I really think that's more an emotional decision than,
of course, it is.
Practical baseball one, because he will be, I'm sorry, Liam, I love you, of no use to the White Sox, because by the time he could pitch for them, they're done.
Yeah.
And it's a 1-year deal. So it's not like, oh, well, we'll save him for 2025 or 28 when we're ready.
I think that's an emotional fan vote for sure. I don't think it's an incorrect emotional fan vote. I like to see that our fans have souls. But it is, I think, the incorrect baseball vote. Yeah.
So we have that. What else have we had going on? Kim Ng, she ain't coming to the White Sox.
No,
forget about that.
I don't know what I don't know what Kim Ng has her eyes on, but whatever it is, it's better than the White Sox.
No, she left Miami because she wasn't given enough control. You don't have any control until a certain person dies.
Yeah, I think Kim Ng is just waiting for the travel secretary to book her flight to Boston. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're saying maybe not Boston, but anyhow, something. She's going to get a really good job. What other rumors? That the White Sox are pursuing Salvador Perez and or Whit Merrifield. And I guess because we only get to bring people from Kansas City because they're one of the only teams worse than us, and we can't keep.
We like to wait till they're 40. So that's that's a really smart move. I actually really love Perez and Whit Merrifield.
Both of them.
I love them both, but my goodness, you could not be aiming for guys closer to the end of their prime playing time. They still have value. The
White Sox literally have no catcher, no major league catcher, because Yaz is gone. I mean, they're not going to pay him.
Thank goodness.
$18 million option.
Goodness.
They're not even an option. He's a free agent. They're not going to pay him whatever it is.
I'd rather have no one back there than Yasmani Grandal. I'd rather just tell the umpire, sorry, bud, these are going to hit you, than have Yasmani Grandal.
And Corey League offered hope, except that he got, I think, two hits in a month. So that was not particularly useful. Carlos Perez, Perez. He's still got possibilities, but not much. When he's at least with zero war, which is better than half of the White Sox players. The only decent defensive catcher we had was Seve. He's gone.
Yeah.
And so we have no catcher. Whit Merrifield, yes. If the team was actually going to be competitive, seriously, not just for the sake of selling tickets, we go out and go, oh, yeah, we're going to be really good. Here's your 10-pack. Whit Merrifield would be a good pickup for the Sox, really. I mean, I don't know how old he is. But
why, though? Where are you going to put him?
Because of defensive versatility. He's Leury Garcia with skill.
Yeah, but that versatility has definitely shifted a lot more toward I'm kind of a left fielder, so which we really don't need. Unless Benintendi were to get hurt. I don't think Merrifield would be a bad pickup at the right price. Don't get me wrong. I think he's, but I also think there are other teams who are going to be willing to pay him a little bit more to keep him around. And I don't see him coming to the White Sox.
I don't think that's going to happen.
And I also don't see Salvador Perez coming to the White Sox.
No, that's not going to happen. There's no sense. He's become a defensive liability, too. The only reason to really bring Salvi in is to make him a coach. Or maybe the manager. The manager would be good. If we have to have a manager from Kansas City, he's my choice.
And I do think that Salvador Perez is one of those guys, and there are so few now, but is one of those guys that is willing to stay in Kansas City and lose to stay in Kansas City. I mean, if there is a face of a franchise in Major League Baseball right now, and just talking like this guy is this team, and I realize Bobby Witt Jr. is going to take
going
that
to be
over,
that team. Yes.
But until that time, which will probably be a year from now or 2 years from now, it's still Salvador Perez. If there is a fan base that loves a guy more than the game itself, it is Kansas City and Salvador Perez. I see him trying. I really do see him trying to make sure he stays a Royal. He got his World Series, so there's not a lot of pressure on him to be like, oh, I got to go somewhere and win a World Series, because he brought a World Series to Kansas City, which that alone is crazy. and he got that done, and it was amazing. It was so exciting. I do think Salvador Perez is a guy who says, I will take a pay cut to stay in order to transition into coaching for Kansas City. I don't necessarily see a world. I do think Salvador Perez has future manager written all over him. However, I think he will try to stay with that organization. They have been so good to him, and he has been so good to them. It seems like a healthy relationship. He loves it there, which, I mean, we could do a whole podcast trying to wrap your head around why you love it there, but he does. So I don't see him moving anywhere at all. I really don't.
Right, certainly not the White Sox. No, and it's just not a fit either way. I took a look at the White Sox top prospects and the whole list of the top 10, and I don't know. We're not ready to predict next season yet.
I'm pretty ready.
Oh, in general, but I mean, you know, whether it's going to be 95 or 105 or 115.
Oh, losses, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was like, I'm ready to fight against your 100 win prediction right now, actually.
No,
I want to make this a double episode.
But the guys who are, I mean, it's grim. Sosa. I think Sosa has enough at bats to show he can't do it.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm wrong. And then maybe new coaches come in and do something. It's just a Colas. What the heck happened there?
Yeah. I mean, Colas is one where I still think you have to keep betting on that. But you just have to hope new coaches can get it done.
But the mystery to me on Colas, more than the fact he couldn't hit in the major leagues the first time he came up, that's common. Is that he really doesn't seem to have any idea what's going on out there.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this before. He was in Japan, where they know everything is done phenomenally well. Even if they don't have the physical skills, it's done mentally really well. And he was mentally really, really bad. I don't know. I don't know if he hasn't been overcome that yet. It's not like he's 18.
Yeah, it's certainly not looking good. No.
I mean, the best person who came up is Zach Remillard, who's a 29-year-old rookie.
Yeah,
who's got no improvement to do. He is what he is. I mean, he did okay, but not well.
He did what you expect a 29-year-old rookie to do, and he did fine.
But I mean, the rest of these guys, all the pitchers that they got for giving away half the staff, and Jake Berger, which is the one that just made absolutely no sense. No, the pitcher's fine. They were either going to be gone or gone in a year.
Yeah.
Jake was going to be around until you're as old as I am now. And it just didn't make sense. But the pitchers that they got, I looked at their walks to innings, and they're all walking about a guy every other inning.
Ooh.
In the minor leagues, in Double-A.
Oh.
And it's possible that that's because the managers are sitting down with them, and pitching coach is sitting down going, now, I want you to be able to throw your slider at any count. So when we get to three balls, I still want you to throw the slider out there. You know, that could affect some of it. but I don't think much of it. I think it's just we got a bunch of guys who can't throw strikes,
Well,
which we're very good
which
at.
fits in.
Now, we're only second in major leagues for most walks allowed. But of course, the team that saved us from being the absolute worst was Oakland.
I mean, they would be a very, they would feel very comfortable in terms of pitcher efficiency coming up to the major leagues to play for the Chicago White Sox. There's no doubt about that.
Speaking of pitcher efficiency, we are out of time, but just because we talk about pitcher efficiency and inefficiency of the White Sox being the worst in the majors, always that's the number of pitches per inning. In these playoffs, these pitchers have been overwhelmingly efficient, even when they're being hit. I mean, it's typical of getting through 5 innings on 72 pitches.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Nola last night, they took him out after six because they didn't need him to throw anymore. 82 pitches, 82 pitches. We've seen it the whole time. We've seen innings where guys have given up 3 runs and they're walking out with 13 pitches. I mean, it's crazy. We can talk about White Sox pitcher efficiency all day. We often do. And it's just, this is this, you're right, though. These playoffs, with the exception of the teams that are out, the teams that are in, these guys are throwing the ball over the plate, and it has been very fun to watch. It's been a relief to watch. That is all the time we have for today. I'm sure we will check in again as the World Series approaches. But do you have any quick final thoughts?
No, just did it.
All right, perfect. So thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time on Sharing Socks.